Om Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Om Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Naman Mohadhyaye Namaha. Naman Mohadhyaye Namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya.
Anantananda Krishnaya.
Jagan Mangala Murtiye.
Jagan Mangala Murtiye.
Let's chant together. Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Naman Mohadhyaye Namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami.
Ahamasmi Sada Bhami.
Kadachinahamapriyaha.
Kadachinahamapriyaha.
Brahmaivahamatasiddham. Brahmaivahamatasiddham. Sachidananda Lakshanam.
Sachidananda Lakshanam.
Let's do it together. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Kadachinahamapriyaha. Brahmaivahamatasiddham. Sachidananda Lakshanam. So here, Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. This is what we've done. Ahamasmi Sada. I always am. And I am always self-evident. Bhami. Therefore, Brahma Eva Aham Atah Siddham. Therefore, it is established that I am Brahma. Brahman, which is Satchidananda Lakshanam, whose definition, whose unique definition is Satchidananda. So we've done the Ahamasmi, we've done the Sat, Aham Asmi Sada, we've done the Sat, and then Aham Sada Bhami, we've done the Chit, conscious Sat, being, existence, Chit, consciousness. We haven't done the Ananda. Okay. So the second line, so I always am. I am always self-evident. Kadachit na. Never at any time. When you take kadachit as an indefinite article, like a pronoun indefinite article, it means sometimes. But when you negate an indefinite article, it makes an absolute. So kadachit means sometimes. Na kadachit means never. Right? Like similarly, if I said kaschit, someone, but na kaschit, no one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, kadachit na aham apriyaha. Never am I apriyaha. Priya means loved or beloved. Never am I not apriyaha. The most pleasing, the most beloved. Priya is you're priyam to me, you're very dear to me. So, in a way, it says, never am I, my own swarupa, my own nature, not beloved. Right? So, that's the definition of ananda. The problem, again and again I say, but it's just because it's so important. Ananda in English is often translated as bliss. And if we translate ananda as bliss, then you'll say, my nature, my true nature is the Atma, is blissful, is bliss, and I'm not feeling bliss. Okay. So because I'm not feeling bliss right now, I'm not having a self-experience. So I have to do something, go somewhere, get into some other altered state so that I can have this experience of ananda, because we're looking at it as a bliss vritti, you know? And that is so misleading, because it's not the problem. One thing that makes it so very misleading is that if I say, ahamasmi, I am, that's present. Yes, I am, but I can be really sorrowfully, I am unhappy. Or, but the amness is still there. I don't have any problem with that. Right? I am a conscious being, chit, no problem. You know? But I am ananda, problem. Right? But the problem is because the way that we define the ananda. It's also, this would be a problem too. If I say, I am sada, I always am. oh, I am free from time, that's a problem. Right? I am free from, that's a problem. But the amness, my being, is not a problem. If I say I am a conscious being, no problem, I'm a conscious being. But if I say the conscious being that I am is free from time, problem. Right? But it's not as big a problem. It's not a big as it's not as big of a problem because I can directly relate, immediately relate to the word sat as existence, being, or amness. And I can say, yes, I am, I just don't recognize myself as free from time. Right? But the amness is immediately available to me. In our language, it's a language problem. Amness is okay. This amness word is okay. It works in the language. Sat, you know, I am sat, I always am. As this word, ahamasmi, I am, I always am. So the language works. Same with consciousness, the language works. I am a conscious being. We have to remove the knowership from our relationship with the word consciousness. If I think of consciousness, I have different ways of defining that. I am conscious always of something, for instance, or yes, I am conscious of that, or you know, yes, I'm a highly conscious person, I'm hip, you know, whatever it is. But nevertheless, I can easily remove these things. And the word consciousness works for chit. But the word bliss does not work for ananda. This translation does not work. Hardly any word works. Fullness doesn't really work. Wholeness doesn't really work. It's a little better than ananda. But what does it mean? You say, I am whole, or I am full, or I am complete. I think the closest word is what they're using, what Lakshmidatta is using here, priyam. I am never not dear to myself. Because we can actually work with that one. Right? And that is pointing to a recognition that that word points to a recognition. Like if I were to say, you are dear to me, when I'm pointing to that dearness, there is a gentle warmth emotion that goes along with that. You are very dear to me, you know? Yeah, exactly. You are very dear to me. So now that, for somebody to be very dear, there's other things involved in that. Like, you are very dear to me, and now you are hurting me, you know? That's something that happens in samsara. My child is so important to me, is so dear to me, and now look at how they're behaving. You know, they're causing me intense pain. Right? So now the dearness is now being usurped. Right? The dearness is being usurped by the intense pain. And so now instead of you're dear to me, you were so dear to me, and now you're the bane of my existence, you're causing me so much pain. So that sense of dearness turns into a certain bitterness, that the dearness that I hold you so dear, and yet now you've become an object of this terrible pain. And so that terrible pain replaces the dearness, you know. It'd be this kind of a resentment or bitterness or whatever it is, or pain or suffering. So we have to remove that. But the removal is easy, you know. Because actually, there's a beautiful verse in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad one of the sages is teaching, I think, Maitreya, his wife. Right? He's a rishi, and he's teaching his wife, you know. Everyone you love your son for the sake of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You love your wealth for the sake of yourself. Because what you really love is yourself. And it goes through everything. You love your family for the sake of yourself. You love your property for the sake of yourself. You love your child for the sake of yourself. You love everything in the world that gives you a sukhavritti. You love those things, right? Because you love your own being, right? you love, what is most dear to you is not, it seems awful, but nevertheless. What is most dear to you is most dear to you because of your own ananda. This person, I say my partner, I love my partner because they make me so happy. I love my child, such a blessing. I love my wealth, it gives me security. I love the experience of wholeness, of fullness, of completeness, of unobstructed meanness that you are all giving me. Now, when you stop giving me that, then who do I still love is me. And now this becomes an obstruction of what we call a nivritti. You know? Mm-hmm. Then in terms of the raga dvesha are two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. You know, I love you because you make me happy. I hate you because you make me unhappy. Right? So what is the real issue here is my own ananda. So what is really beloved? What is really the most beloved? Not anything in the world. Nothing in the world. Because the belovedness of anything in the world, including any vritti I have, the belovedness of any vritti has only to do with my own ananda. So I love you as long as you make me happy. You know, then you are very, very dear to me. You're dear to me because I feel whole and complete and loved. Right? If you make me unhappy, then because of dharma, I can say you're all dear to me even though you make me unhappy, you know. But you're not really contributing to my happiness. And so at that moment, you are not the most beloved thing to me. At that moment, what is the most beloved thing to me is my happiness. And in fact, therefore, even when you are being how you're supposed to be for my happiness, behaving as you're supposed to be behaving to make me happy, even when that's happening, I love you because of my own ananda. And so in this section of the Brihadaranyaka, he goes through so many, the rishi, it's Vishwamitra. It's irritating me, I can't remember his name. Anyway, he goes through so many different life circumstances. You love this for the sake of the Atma. You love this for the sake of the Atma. You love this for the sake of the Atma. So who do you really love? The Atma. Whether it's raga dvesha, in terms of raga dvesha, I love this so that I can be happy. I want this. This is when we talk about the desire template, I want this. I really want this. Why? Because it would make me so happy. I want this so that I can be happy. I want this so that I can be happy. That's the raga. That so that I can be happy is the key there. I want this, but if I don't get it, I'm fine. That's a preference. Raga is I want this because it makes me happy, or I want this so that I can be happy. I need this so that I can be happy. The dvesha is I don't want this. Why? Because it will make me unhappy. I don't want this. I want to get rid of this so that I can be happy. I want this to go away so that I can be happy. So what do I really want? What is this thing? Doesn't really matter, this thing in the middle. What I want to be happy. What is most important to me is my own ananda. Mm. What is the most beloved to me? My ananda. That is the most dear. And this thing in the middle is only servicing that wholeness, that ananda, that experience of me being me. Right? Me being whole and complete. So these things don't really count. It's a secondary attachment. I'm attached to this for this. But if this object is not providing this, then I'm not attached to it anymore. In fact, I want it to change. I want it to go away. I want it to disappear. Do whatever needs to be done so that I can have this. And what is this? Is that experience of ananda. What does that mean? The experience of ananda is that which is most dear to me. Now, what is most dear to me? When do I feel like myself? I'll tell you the huge problem. I am always experiencing myself through a vritti for an ajnani, for one who doesn't have knowledge. I experience myself through the lens of the vritti, through the lens of the emotion. Right? If I'm experiencing my being through the lens of the vritti, there is no problem. I am happy, I'm sad, I am agitated, I am calm, I'm compassionate, I'm dull. But I am is not in question. The condition of the mind does not affect, right? The condition of the mind doesn't affect my own presence, my own being. The knownness of my being is not affected by the vritti. The wholeness of my being, the ananda, the beloved nature of my being, is affected by the emotions in the vritti. Because the emotions in the vritti, like a sadness or agitation or depression or anger or hurt, the whole negative spectrum, competes with my nature. It competes with me. And so when a negative vritti of any sort is there, I feel nonplussed, right? Because the negative vritti is almost like a virus or something. It is a mental condition, and also this one other thing about these vrittis, emotions. Emotions pervade the mind. As opposed to, like, let me say what I'm meaning here. Like, for instance, if I'm very sad, then all of my thoughts and all of my perceptions are taking place in a sad mind. It's not like I have this thought, and then I have this thought, and I have this thought. It's that I have a sad mind in which all the thoughts are taking place. Right? And so sadness becomes as though my nature. And now I am illumining this sad nature. And the sad nature is very different than the wholeness or the fullness of my own being. So the negative spectrum, whether it be sadness or hatred or dislike or agitation or jealousy or envy, the whole sad spectrum, the whole dark spectrum, right, is something which, from my standpoint of the Atma, my being as I am, illumines that. Like the sun illumining the rain cloud or the thunderstorm or the just a foggy day, you know. The sun is illumining that from the standpoint of the sun. Nothing is covered. My being is not covered at all. But if the rain cloud of the mind, you know, is trying to look at me, it has no viveka at all, it's that this emotion that overwhelms the mind is competing with the self that's illumining that mind. Because the affect of the natural affect, changeless affect of the self, is now illumining the as though temporarily changeless affect of my being, of my mind. Everybody see that? So now what happens is, just as a samsari, I'm saying, I have this negative types of affects where my mind becomes ongoingly, temporarily, but ongoingly sad, in which all thoughts are taking place, ongoingly agitated, ongoingly angry, ongoingly bitter, all the whole negative, unpleasant spectrums that are actually go very much against my own nature. So they're something I want to get rid of. I have dvesha toward all of these type of thoughts. Mm. I want them to go. Because they don't resonate with who I am. On the other hand, the positive spectrum of emotions, love, compassion, joy, humor, laughter, you know, shanti, at peace, experiences of love and joy and happiness, this whole positive spectrum of emotions are different from each other, They're different from each other, but they have a quality which is resonates with me, right? So compassion is different than, say, than just plain shanti, or different than joy, or different than laughter. They're all just very, they're variables. They're different from each other, but they have, what they have in common is that they don't oppose me, and so my own being. And so even bliss which comes and goes, doesn't oppose me either. And that's in a really an exalted mental state, right? So I love bliss, and if I go all the way, or I love supreme love, extreme experiences of love, or extreme experiences of compassion, you know, because the mind enjoys such a deep relaxation there, and I feel exalted. It's like taking speed or something. You have an exalted state of these positive emotions that don't in any way, if anything, they, they emphasize my being in a beautiful way, rather than this negative spectrum which take away from my being in a painful way. So this whole spectrum of emotion that the mind is capable of, right? I, as an Ajnani, am experiencing myself through this spectrum. So I will take myself to be hateful, angry, bitter, unhappy, disappointed, upset. All of them. Probably 100 different words we could use. And so I become all of those. And then I become all of these positive, this positive spectrum. And I really like this one, and I really don't like this one, you know. And now the other thing is, this one I don't like is also gradiated. I don't like, I really don't like, I really, really, really don't like. This is the supreme hell at the end, okay? There's hell down there, okay? So I like, I really like, I really like, I love, I love, I love. There's nothing better. So now, what do we think when we think of enlightenment, liberation? The hell states are gone, and I have reached these extreme, the extreme positive state, more bliss than we could even imagine. And so that is what I'm looking for, and that is what I'm waiting for, because ananda means bliss. So there's bliss, blisser, blissest. I want the blissest. Yeah. So because of the emotional spectrum that we have, now in this whole emotional expression, a spectrum, notice this, the amness is the same. That's the same. The consciousness is the same. Because we are not relating to consciousness in terms of emotional affect. We're not relating to amness in terms of emotional affect. But we are relating to ananda, bliss, in terms of emotional affect. That is our problem. So now we have to think, okay, say by ananda, the word ananda, we are really not talking about emotional affect. We're not talking about this spectrum and trying to get to the highest spectrum of an emotional affect that the mind is capable of having. This is not the meaning of ananda in the Satchit Ananda. So what is the meaning of ananda then? Ananda means ananta, the limitlessness or the non-dual nature of my being expressed in the mind. Now, what does that mean? Who I am, imagine, so ananda, we can look at all of these words, and we do look at all of these words from the standpoint of the mind for an Ajnani who is gaining knowledge. In other words, when we say, I say, amness is totally available to you no matter what the vritti is, you are still looking at it from the standpoint of the vritti. We have to remove the vritti. Because you're saying, yes, I am this, I am this, I am this, I am this, I am this. Right? So it's just amness is available to you to recognize in the vritti. Chit, consciousness, is available to you. Chit, consciousness, is available for you to recognize within the vritti. We don't have to take the vritti off. Yes, I am conscious, 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 conscious. Ananda, not so easy. Because ananda has an affect, right? So we don't recognize that so easily within the vritti. For both the existence and the consciousness, we're going to have to leave the vritti behind. But we can recognize it in the vritti. But the vritti will still have to be left behind because the vritti has no being of its own. Because it comes into being and goes out of being, so it has to go in terms of really recognizing amness per se as being my own nature. But now for the ananda. The emotions in the vrittis, that the vrittis are capable of, it's really brought about by the tension in the vritti, right? Whenever the vritti is as a shanta vritti, what a shanta vritti means, the vritti has no tension at that time. It is like it is in a relaxed state. Right? In that relaxed state, shanti means there's no stress. It's just like a clean mirror. Right? It's not a dusty mirror. It's not a dirty mirror. It's not a warped mirror. It's just a clean mirror. Or how a very clean, clear lake reflects the sun. Right? As opposed to a muddy lake, as opposed to an agitated lake. A clean, clear lake reflects the sun in a way that I can relate to. Right? The sun can say, ah, that's me there in the mirror. That's how I am. And the lake can say, ah, I feel so much like myself. If the self is the sun, that reflection of the sun in the lake feels, ah, I'm totally here. I'm totally present. And in the muddy lake, you know, the lake will say, I'm so dirty, dull, dark, and depressed. I just don't feel like myself. It doesn't feel like myself because it's not in a condition that's reflecting myself. So of course, it feels alienated. My mind is the same way. If it has a really a shanta vritti, I feel whole and complete. What does that mean experientially? Is that the ananda that the mind is enjoying via that reflection is the ananta of the self, the limitless nature of myself, the unencumbered nature of myself. Nothing is competing with it. It is just, from my own standpoint, my own being, the wholeness of my own being, has no competition. So now, it's kind of hard to explain this, but let me just keep trying. If I remove from me, like in deep sleep, for instance, even though there's total ajnana vritti there, ignorance vritti, if I remove all duality from me in deep sleep, I am absolutely unencumbered. It's like the verse that we had in the Katha Upanishad, I think it was. I pervade everything. Sarvatha. It's like I have become everything. Because there's nothing, there's no namarupa there to contain me. Similarly, when the mind goes into more of a samadhi, into a shanta vritti, or into a meditative state, my being is simply not contained. I am as I am. And that state is ananda. The state of me just being me as I am is the perfect state. That is the state of wholeness, of well-being, because there's nothing in my way. There's never anything in my way anyway. But from the standpoint of the upadhi, the meanness of who I am is totally free from any type of competition. And so in a deep sleep state, we have that, except that there's total ajnanam, ignorance in the mind. But there is no competition. I simply am. When the mind is resolved into a meditative state, there and not having this agitation and unconscious vibrations and things going on to kind of dull it, I am simply as I am. That is the most beloved state. It's not really a state, right? But I only view it as a state because I'm looking at it through the shanta vrittis in the mind. But those shanta vrittis, those peaceful vrittis in the mind, don't interfere with me. Right? And so from the standpoint of these vrittis, I experience complete peace and joy and happiness or contentment or well-being or this is who I am. It is an ajnani, you've probably, before having any knowledge, you've had this experience, I'm sure. Bhagavan gives us this experience in different ways. This is me. This is who I am. You recognize, you know, this is me. This is how I'm supposed to be, you know. How can I keep it? How can I? I remember one time when I really had that kind of experience, and all the sorrow that came as I recognized that that it was temporary and I wasn't going to be able to keep it, and I didn't know where it was and I didn't know how to get it back. But that is the most beloved, and there's so much sorrow as it slips away from you. It's not slipping away from you. And it's also, this is the important thing that I have to keep making more and more clear. The affects, positive affects in the mind are different one from another. That's because they're mental states with different levels of shanti, different levels of absence of agitation. Right? So they change. So a compassionate state is different from a being in love state, from a happy state, from a joyous state, from a bliss state. They're all. Those bliss states come and go because they're really belonging to the mind, which is unencumbered. It's experience. It's just like a highlighted experience of your own being. So what has to happen is I have to recognize what this variety of bliss states are pointing to, or what is their source. You know, like if I have a mirror that's kind of clean, what is the source of the sun? Say a sun's reflecting in that mirror. The sun is the source. If the mirror is really, really shiny, still the sun is the source. The sun is the source. The sun is the source. Whatever the thing is. You have to discover, what is the source? What is the source of this, first of all, these experiences of ananda? Because whether it's the sat, the chit, or ananda, we're looking at them initially from the standpoint of the vritti. So what is the source of the ananda, of these variety of degrees of bliss states? You know? And if I can recognize that source, the me, the nature of myself that is illumining that bliss state, you know, I can then start to recognize the nature of this me that is illumining the negative states, and recognize, and then I can ask myself, like in meditation, you know, why the word ananda? Here's the negative bliss, here's the negative states, here are the bliss states. I am present to all of them. Like the sun is present to all of the different things that it illumines, it's not changing at all. Its swarupa, its nature, is ever present. It's never covered. Why is it called ananda? You know. Why is it called ananda even if I remove all the vrittis? All of them. It is, it's swarupa, it's lakshana, the satchit ananda lakshana, is the actual definition of Brahman, right? It's not the definition of the vrittis. So it's not talking about the existence in the vrittis or the consciousness in the vrittis, or the ananda in the vrittis. It's using the vritti to point to the conscious being which the vritti depends on, or the existence, the being itself which the vritti depends on, or the ananda which the vritti depends on. And that ananda is what gets me so upset. Right? The ananda nature of myself is very upsetting for the mind. When the mind is not like a clean mirror. Because the mind is then taking on a condition that I can't say I am ananda. I can be miserable and say I am conscious being and I exist. But when my mind is miserable, I can't say I'm ananda. I say, I'm miserable. What do you mean I'm ananda? I remember once when I was sitting crying at the ashram in 1972. You know, and Swamiji has been teaching about Brahman and Ananda, and I was all of this, and I was crying. What Ananda? What Brahman? I didn't feel any Ananda. So what is that?
Oh, that's a disaster.
Yeah, it's disastrous. But it's good also. You know? So whatever the vritti, my being is there, the consciousness is there, but the lack of ananda or fullness or this is what I want to be, this is who I am, that is not there. I grieve over my amness because I take it to be finite, right? But I'm not deprived of my being. You know, I grieve over my consciousness because of its limitations and could be also finite. It's also limited. I don't know everything. So I'm always seeking knowledge, but the conscious being is there. But the ananda, it's more than, I grieve over its absence. Its absence, the absence of myself, you know. And so, discovering the ananda in the dukkha-vritti is a huge thing. Recognizing the ananda that is me, that is illumining every vritti, the whole spectrum. Recognizing that ananda that is not dependent upon the sukha vritti is the key. That's the big, big thing. Because otherwise, we're totally samsaris. You know, my freedom is dependent upon the sukha vritti, you know. Like Swamiji, I understand everything. We used to always laugh, and Swamiji used to make fun of this, make fun of us. Swamiji, I understand everything. It's really clear to me. But Swamiji, where's the ananda? When will the ananda come? You know, when will the ananda come? That's a problem.
It's a big question.
It's a big question. But the big question is just has to do with the aviveka, the lack of discrimination between my being and the vrittis. And it makes sense in terms of the sat-chit, there's no problem. The ananda is so difficult, right? The sat-chit has its own difficulty, but it's not been usurped by the dukkha-vritti, right? And so we use the sukha-vritti, the happy, you know, the happy vritti, these happy thought modifications to point to, we try to use them to point to the one that's illumining that vritti. And one good exercise is this, beautiful exercise. When you have some sort of a sukha-vritti of any sort, perfect time to meditate and to turn your attention toward your own presence. Because what you're doing now is turning your attention away from the projection and toward the source. And your mind already is enjoying a meditative state because of the shanti. So you turn toward the source and then the ananda just increases. But still you can be trapped in the sukha-vritti. Then you have to look more toward just me, who I am, the one who is present to the sukha-vritti, so that you can take off the dress of the sukha-vritti and just recognize yourself. But then what you have to do is welcome a dukkha-vritti. And when you have a dukkha-vritti, a painful vritti, then at that time, again, accepting the painful vritti, welcoming it, you can be with me. If you don't welcome it, I'll tell you what the problem is. You don't welcome the painful vritti, then you have all these vrittis are saying, you have to get away, you have to go, you're causing me pain, and you build a web around the painful vritti, which makes more of a painful vritti. It's not the problem that it's making more of a painful vritti, it's that your mind is only engaged in the painful vritti. That's the problem. So now when you have a painful vritti, a dull vritti, whatever, one that is not exactly desirable to you, that vritti, you accept it so that the mind is not upset by it, you accept it, and there it is. Now you just turn your attention gently, not trying to get rid of, welcoming the painful vritti, not trying to get rid of it, turning your attention toward your own being, just to the one who is present to the painful vritti. And you start doing that, in fact, to every, especially to every emotional vritti that you have. Because what happens is you start to recognize yourself, who is free of all of these vrittis, the one who is not enhanced by the Riti. The one who simply is, the one who is simply me. And that one is the beloved. That is the one that no matter what the Riti is, I still want. I don't want to die. If there's some heaven or hell or something, if I'm going to go to heaven, I don't want to go to heaven unless I go there. Not some soul. If I need to go there. I don't want to travel unless I am going. You know. That one who is always present and is not a sukha-vritti and is not a dukkha-vritti, but is the very nature that the mind is continually positively or negatively reacting to. The positive reactions, I want this so that I can be happy, or I want to get rid of this so that I can be happy, those don't get in my way. That's what makes samsara samsara. That's what I go after. All of these sukha-vrittis, because they don't get in my way, they don't compete with me. All of the dukkha-vrittis, I want to get rid of, because they compete with me. They are something that are taking away from me. I am the most beloved. There is never, ever, ever a time when I am not the most beloved. I love you because you make me happy. I don't love you because you make me unhappy. You take away my ananda. You take away myself. You, on the other hand, give me myself. It's all projection. The self, myself, is the ananda. So here, when we say the aham asmi sada, I always am, right? That's easy. I always, the amness is easy, not the always. We want that the all always is where the dukkha is, but that we don't have the always part. But I am, and I am self-evident. I'm always here. But the always part we have to work on. But then he says, I am never, never am I not dear. I am always, positively always, I am the most dear. That takes another type of work. It's another type of work. It's another type of recognition that is perhaps the most important. Understanding, really getting the ananda, what we mean by ananda of my own nature, is the most important, because what if I always am a conscious being and my swarupa, my nature, is suffering? I don't want, you want to have, we want to realize that you are timeless suffering. We want, I am timeless ananda. I am free to be me. The me that is my own swarupa is absolutely ananda. It is limitless and free. Nothing can impede on me, and nothing ever does impede on me. For jnani, your sukha and dukkha vrittis are not very important. They're not important because they don't touch you or change you. I don't really care if I have a sukha or dukkha vritti. I don't consider the sukha vrittis to be competing with me. I like me. I like the ananda of my own being. It's so stable, so beautiful. It is what is most dear. So my mind would prefer to be just with me, and if there's a sukha-vritti, that's fine, but it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. There's no competition. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't choose to have the dukkha-vrittis, but they don't really matter either, mm-hmm. because they're not covering me. That's the viveka. You know? So this beautiful verse, you know, I could spend 3 years on it, because it's complete. It's really, really very complete verse. But to work to, I feel that understanding recognizing the ananda of my own being that never comes and goes, no matter what the vritti, is the key to liberation. It is what is Vedanta, really. Because with the sat-chit, it's just simply not enough. Who cares? It's the sat-chit ananda. And that recognition in yourself, the recognition, your mind's recognition, that nothing ever touches the ananda, that which is most dear, no matter what the vritti. No matter the universe being here or not, is totally irrelevant to the ananda, which is my own being. So that's the crux of the whole teaching, really. Because if it weren't that way, then who cares? It's not good enough. It's not enough. Right? So that's it. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.